seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
A brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Welcome in. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, I'm happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. Hopefully you enjoyed your weekend. We had a very busy sports weekend here locally. We'll get into that, give you the results of everything that went down in just a bit. The basketball season coming to an end for USU Eastern. Both the men and the women of the conference tournament suffered season-ending losses on Friday. High school baseball was busy over the weekend. Two games in 2 days for Carbon. Track and field back at it. Tennis. So just a lot going on, and we'll get into all of it here on Drive Time Sports. Nationally, now we get down to the final 20 or so games of the NBA season, but really, for me, it's been all about baseball over the last couple of weeks. I mean, opening day is such an important day for sports in this country, but the NBA's hit a little bit of a lull. It just has, for whatever reason. I mean, load management plays a factor in that, and I think it could have been expected going into this year just based on the short offseason. But NBA is going to get really intense here in the next couple of weeks. But for me, it was baseball over the weekend. And I thought it was a fairly quiet weekend on the national end, until we had Sunday night baseball. And if you missed this last night, you missed a doozy between the Braves and the Phillies. And if you're an Atlanta Brave fan, you have every right to be livid today and also question why Major League Baseball even has instant replay. I think this is a great place to open up the week of the show, because instant replay, it doesn't matter if it's the NFL, if it's college football, college basketball, the NBA, baseball, doesn't matter. I think it's factual that there is a contingency of people who hate booth reviews in sports because it slows up the game. If you've gone to an NBA game, the final 2 minutes last forever anyway. The last 2 minutes go on for 30 minutes. And that's because we have to review every tenth of a second, right? We have to review everything to make sure that clock's exactly right. You have the coach's challenges. In the NBA, you have a grip of timeouts that you can use throughout the entire ball game. And so the last 2 minutes of an NBA game lasts a really long time. And if you love basketball, you don't mind it. But if you're at the game, boy, it can definitely play into the atmosphere a little bit. It really can. NFL is the same thing. I don't know how many NFL games you've been to. I went to a ton of NFL games over the last 3 or 4 years. And yeah, sometimes you say, really? Another review? When it comes from the booth. I don't mind it when a coach challenges. But when it comes from the booth time and time and time again, it gets a little nerve-wracking. Baseball, I honestly think the replay in baseball, the review, has been okay. But I questioned it last night. Alec Bohm in the top of the ninth inning comes sliding into home plate, and he's not even close to hitting the plate. He never touches it. And it's a bang-bang play, a short pop-up to left field. I believe it was Didi Gregorius. And I thought there's absolutely no way that Bohm is going to be able to score. I didn't think there was any way. So a pop-up to left field, Marcell Ozuna comes in, throws a ball, bounces twice, goes into Travis Dinard's mitt. He tags Bohm. We go to the bottom of the ninth, tied 6-6. No, the home plate umpire rules him safe. And upon review, it was as obvious as could be that Bohm never touched the dish. He never touched it. And it was obvious. And they didn't overturn it. I couldn't believe it. And it wasn't as if this was a game on the MLB ticket, you know, a game that's not nationally televised. because you're bored on a Sunday night, so you tune in to the Brewers and the Mets on the ticket, right? Because nothing else, there's nothing else to watch on a Sunday night, and you got the hankering for baseball. No, this was ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball, and the umpires botched the ending of this game so badly. Now, the Braves had a chance to tie it up at the bottom of the ninth. They didn't do so, and as soon as the third out was recorded, boy, the fans just let them have it. And then I had to watch SportsCenter afterwards, which I rarely do. I rarely watch late-night SportsCenter, but I had to last night just so I could watch this play over and over again. And I know that there have been instances where you look at replay and you say, what? You know, if you're an NFL fan, you'll remember Calvin Johnson and his touchdown that was wiped away against the Chicago Bears. They reviewed that and said, no, he didn't complete the process, whatever the hell that means. I still don't know what that means. But last night, I was floored. And that was, in my mind, that was the most entertaining aspect of the weekend outside of my personal preferences in sports, because I just couldn't get over the fact that they missed this call. So baseball was king once again over the weekend. And the NBA, we had a couple of standout dunks, a couple of terrific plays. But that kind of ruled the roost last night in baseball, the Phillies and the Braves. The Braves playing much better as of late, couldn't get the win last night. As far as the NBA is concerned, the Utah Jazz, they've now won two straight. They're going to make their return to KOAL tonight. We'll take a look at the schedule in the NBA as we get down to it. Again, it's a 72-game season. The Jazz have played 53 games, so we're down to the final 19. Taking a look at the schedule, the Jazz tonight get the Washington Wizards. Should be an easy victory for Utah. Tip-off for this game is set for 7 p.m. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the live play-by-play call. Beginning at 6:50, and then again tip-off at 7. 5:30 tonight, we get the Lakers and the Knicks. The Lakers delivered a brutal beatdown to the Brooklyn Nets, who did not have James Harden, but the Lakers didn't have Anthony Davis or LeBron James. And it was in Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving gets tossed in the third quarter. Kevin Durant played, but the Nets had no answer for the Lakers. It was really a bizarre game. And so you start looking at where the Lakers are sitting at in the standings, and this matters to the Utah Jazz, because I just do not believe it is a good matchup. And the Jazz will get the Lakers this weekend, but there will be no AD, and there will be no LeBron, which means that by the time, if the time comes, where the Lakers and the Jazz meet in the playoffs, Utah had never seen LA with Anthony Davis this year, because he didn't play last time when Utah obliterated the Lakers. He didn't play. So I bring this up because the Lakers have done okay without LeBron and AD. I mean, they're a 500 basketball team. I didn't think they'd be 500. I thought Lakers would slip down the standings, hover around that 7 or 8 spot if LeBron and AD were going to miss significant time. And it looks like Davis may be able to return next week. LeBron about 3 weeks out still. But the Lakers right now are the 5 seed, and it would put them in a matchup with the Nuggets. And I'll tell you why I hate this for the Utah Jazz. I believe that Utah can get through any team in the Western Conference outside of LA and Denver. I think those are the absolute worst matchups for Utah. Now, the good news is, if the Lakers and Nuggets were to stay at 4-5, they would have to beat one another in the opening round. The bad news is that's who Utah would get in the second round. Right? You would love it if Denver somehow was a 2 seed and the Lakers climbed to a 3, keep them on the other end of the bracket. That's what you want if you're Utah. I don't think that's going to happen. The Lakers right now are a good 4 games back of Phoenix and 4 games back of the Clippers, 3 games back of the Clippers. I don't think they make that up, which tells me they're going to be a 4 or 5 seed. And as far as Utah being the 1, I don't care who Utah gets in the first round. Memphis, San Antonio, Golden State, doesn't matter. Utah will cruise through the first round. But I don't fear the Suns. I don't fear the Clippers. It's the Nuggets and Lakers. That's the 2 teams you have to watch out for if you're a Jazz fan. And the way it's shaping up, both of those squads would play each other in the opening round. So again, you get rid of one of them. But if you're Utah, you'd have to see one of those 2 in the second round. That's not ideal. Tonight we get Philly at Dallas. Dallas had a humdinger of a game last night with the San Antonio Spurs. Luka Doncic's last second heave falling short. Dallas dropping that game by 2 points. Those Spurs will be on the road tonight to take on Orlando. We get Chicago at Memphis at 7 p.m. The Pelicans will play host to the Kings also at 7. And then we move into the 8 o'clock hour. It's the Nuggets at the Warriors. That game is on ESPN. Nightcap tonight, Houston at Phoenix. One game has been postponed, Brooklyn and Minnesota. And that falls in line with a couple of sporting events that have been postponed due to a shooting. The Minnesota Twins, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Minnesota Wild games have all been postponed tonight following the police shooting of Dante Wright on Saturday night. The Twins were expected to play the Boston Red Sox. The Timberwolves were scheduled to play the Brooklyn Nets. The Wild, they were set to play the St. Louis Blues. Those games have been postponed, but still a wide slate of games in Major League Baseball outside of Minnesota. In fact, the baseball slate will begin at 4:30 with the Padres and the Pirates. The Padres at 7-3, they've gotten off to a great start so far this season. Yu Darvish will be on the hill today. 5:05, we get the Mariners and the Orioles. The Yankees will take on the Blue Jays. The Phillies, I know they stole one last night. They're back at it as they take on the New York Mets. 5:10, we get the Rangers and the Rays. The Marlins will battle the Braves. And then we get the Cubs and Brewers and the Nationals and the Cardinals. So a lot of baseball between 4 and 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock hour, Angels, Royals, Indians, White Sox, Tigers will travel to take on the Astros. We get the A's, who did win a series over the weekend, and they go 2-1, finally winning a series at 3-7. They take on the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then in the nightcap tonight, it's the Reds and the Giants. How about the Cincinnati Reds? I mean, right now, sitting at 6-3. They were smashing the ball early on. You knew they would come back down to earth somewhat, but still in first place in the Central in a division that's going to be highly entertaining, I think, throughout the entire season. Let's take a quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports straight ahead on the show today. We're going to be joined by Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon High School Track and Field Squad. Looking forward to that interview. Also, we'll be joined by a Michael Long. We're going to talk about his book, 42 Today. Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball is 3 days off. Perfect timing to talk Jackie Robinson and his legacy in the game of baseball. That's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports. We're back in just a moment.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're finally through spring break for both Carbon and Emory. Now we can get back to a regular high school sports schedule for the final 4 weeks of the spring sports season. Carbon High School came out of their spring break last week, and the track and field team picked up right where they left off, as you heard during that local sports update. They dominated the competition in Blanding, and we're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest. Coach Jimmy Jukes is joining us over the phone. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me on, Jordan.
Yeah, always look forward to a coach. And the last time we had you on, we were talking about going into spring break, and that can be alarming for some coaches. I mean, kids, they get away from their daily rituals. I mean, you get a break. Sometimes kids are a little unmotivated during spring, Christmas break, Thanksgiving break, and it's understandable. That definitely was not the case for your track and field squad. You guys return, you go to Blanding, and you just dominate the competition. The Lady Dinos continue to impress more and more each time out, this time defeating second place Manti by 103 points, and then Carbon's boys squad getting the best of Monticello. So, Coach, to get back and rolling after spring break, I'm sure you couldn't be happier with the performance.
No, I couldn't be. And, you know, it was a windy day down there, and anybody that's driven to Blanding on a bus with kids, it's a long trip, and so you always worry how the performance is going to be getting off the bus, let alone having spring break the week before.
So let's talk about, first off, the girls' team. I want to talk about this because, Coach, at the beginning of the year when we were talking about how dominant they were to start the season, it's unheard of to score this amount of points. It's unheard of to do it again and again and again, and this time it's 276 points, and it's against good competition. We're talking Manti, San Juan, Grand. These are schools that we see fairly regularly. So talk about the girls' dominant performance at accumulating 276 points.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to watch the girls perform the way they did. I think we ended up winning 7 or 8 events. And then, you know, we just, in events, we were putting 5, 6 girls in some cases, 7 girls in the top 8. And, you know, this team is just, I mean, that's what this team is. It's a team. You know, we have some standouts on this team, but for the most part, we're getting points from our throwers. We're getting points from our jumpers. We're getting points from our sprinters. Everywhere you look on the track, we're scoring points. And the team's coming together really well. And they act like a team. And they, even during the spring break, they were messaging each other, you know, about workouts and what they were doing to stay in shape and stuff. And it's a lot of fun to watch them do this.
Yeah, as you alluded to, scoring points in the jump and the throwing competitions as well. I mean, Coach, over the last, I don't know, what has it been, 6-7 years since you and I have been talking, I've grown accustomed to seeing your team perform well in, you know, the 4x1, the 4x4. We get points in those events, but when you start pulling out first place finishes the way Haley did in the long jump and in the high jump, and then you claim a top spot in the javelin as well, I mean, this is where it's a little bit unique to what we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing is, in the past, you know, we'd get points, but we're winning a lot of these events too. And like you said, I mean, in javelin, you know, Mariah throwing the way that she did, she's stepping up. You know, Julia Shorts over there has done really well as well. And then you look over on the shot put, Kayla Lee, she's done well for us this year, doing some really good things on the girls' side. And Liz Pugliese is throwing great in the disc. And it's funny, that group of throwers, to be honest, my girls and boys throwing group this year has been a lot of fun to watch them. They're a full unit. They come together. You know, Bradley Wood and Carson Shepherd and all those guys over there, Bowden Robinson, they all get together, girls and boys, and they work hard, work together. And Kristen Johnson, my throws coach, is doing a great job with that group.
Coach, with that being said, and we can talk about previous meets as well with this team. I know that at this stage, exactly 1 month away from region, it's not always important to win meets. And I think sometimes this always deserves clarification from coaches, because you guys have a long-term plan is to put the kids in the best spot to win region and to win state. And so as odd as that sounds, around this particular time, it's not always the plan to go out and win the meet.
Right. You know, we did that right before we went on spring break. We went over to Strata, and our goal at that meet was to go and get our relays qualified for state, so we didn't have to worry about it. And we went over and executed that plan, you know, amazingly, got all of our relays qualified for state on the girls' side. So they're set and ready to go. And now our goal is just to figure out, okay, you know, and it's always fun. When we take, like, Haley and throw her in the long jump, I don't know that we're going to use Haley in the long jump at region, but it's just another thing that the other schools have to worry about. Every time we move an athlete around, don't be surprised when you see McKenna Blank get moved around a little bit in some other events, just to give schools another thing to think about, because we have these kids that can go a lot of events. Emily Elliott is a prime example of that too. She could go, you know, 5 or 6 different events if we put her in there. And sometimes you do that just to see how it would work. And also it just makes other schools kind of think, you know, what is Carbon going to do when it gets to region? And the nice thing is we have a lot of girls at our disposal that can do a lot of different things.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jim Jukes, again, of the Carbon High School track and field squad. Coach, we'll move over to the boys' side. And again, just kind of a routine at this point. Riker Childs was fantastic. I believe you guys picked up 7 first-place events overall, and he was responsible for 3 of them.
Yeah, you know, Riker's a gamer, man. That kid will come out and run his tail off and jump, and he is just, you know, Riker, we ask him to do a lot. He does 4 individual events for us, and we have to have him do that to keep our guys where they're at. But the guys are stepping up and helping out. You know, Kobe Cruz and Easton Humes on the distance side did a great job this weekend of loading up and really going after it. You know, if they hadn't performed the way they did, our boys aren't in the conversation. Bowden Robinson, you know, he threw well in the javelin, won the javelin PR'd by like 13 feet. Carson Shepherd threw really great in the discus, you know, threw in cowboy boots, and apparently cowboy boots are really good to throw in the discus. So, you know, and we have these kids come out and do this kind of stuff, and the boys just, they keep finding ways to step up. You know, we got Gary Gunter on our team, that's one of our distance kids, and he helps us get our relays together. And he is just, he's that senior leadership that just kind of helps pull the kids along and says, hey, let's get this, let's get this, let's get this. And that's helped. And then adding, Caleb Winfrey to our jump squad and sprint squad's helped quite a bit too.
Have you ever seen anyone throwing cowboy boots before?
I haven't. And the thing is, he throws in practice all the time in cowboy boots. And so, you know, and he's like, I can throw over 100 if I throw my cowboy boots on. And so we said, well, why don't you throw in your cowboy boots? You know, I mean, there's not a rule that says he can't do that, and it's got a slick surface on the bottom, and lo and behold, he threw over 100 in the disc. And so I think the cowboy boots might be here to stay. I'm curious to see how BYU reacts if we take him up to BYU and he throws the cowboy boots. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, to say the least, to say the least. As you mentioned, Coach, outside of Riker, who has just been dominant, I mean, we have other kids. Will Carmichael, Easton Humes, as you mentioned, Bradley Wood. I mean, it's just, it's a deep team. Is this one of the deepest boys teams? Now that we're a good month into the season, you can probably pinpoint this a little better. Is it the deepest boys team we've had in quite some time?
Yeah, I think it's across the board. I think in the past we've had like a really good distance program, or we've had, you know, really good jump programs. You know, remember when we had Carson Frame and Derek Hillam? You know, we had some really good standout kids like that. This year we have our really good standout in Riker, but we've got these other kids that are stepping up and performing really well, and so we're deep. You know, we're deep in the throws. We've got, if you had told me at the start of the year, all three of those boys, I knew Carson would perform pretty well, but Bowden and Bradley both came out of nowhere for me. I didn't know them before this year, and so that was a huge surprise for us, and they've done a really great job. And we've got a lot of young talent that's coming up. Like you're talking Will Carmichael, he comes out to stay in shape for football, which, you know, I wish more football players would think of, because I'm looking forward to seeing him perform on the field, because I think he's developed speed and really become a really heck of an athlete. He works his tail off in practice, does the hard things, and that's all you can ask from these guys, is to come out and do the hard things and not shy away from it.
Well, Coach, before I let you go, we'll talk about what's up next. You mentioned it. You're going to go to Uinta. This Uinta Invitational coming up this weekend. Should be a difficult place. A lot of competition, and I know that's a great thing. But by the time this weekend comes, we're looking at about 3 weeks away from the state championship meet.
We are, and we get right into the mold, because we got Uinta this weekend, and then we got to bounce around. And on Tuesday, we got an invite to the GUAB 8x8, and they basically invite 8 really good teams to that meet. So it's kind of a exclusive group to get invited there. We'll take 8 athletes in every event. That one, it's going to be tough, because we'll be going against some 4A, 5A schools in that one. And then we'll turn around and head down to Monticello, and then we'll be back at home for the Eastern Utah Championship on a Friday night, which we need to talk about in a couple weeks. And that one will be a lot of fun. It'll be that one I'm really, really looking forward to.
Well, Coach, I always appreciate you taking out the time. It's always fun to get an update on the team. Congratulations on the start. Keep it rolling. And I know, again, we'll talk real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jordan.
That's Coach Jimmy Jukes, again, of the Carbon High School track and field team. You can get a complete recap of what went down this past weekend right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to be joined by an author, Michael Long. There's a new book out. It's called 42 Today. It was released just over 2 months ago, and it's talking about Jackie Robinson. And I've said this here on the show for a long time. We use the term legend and icon frequently, but there's a big difference between the two. There are legends, and then there are icons. Jackie Robinson is an icon, and Jackie Robinson Day is right around the corner, April 15th. Everyone will be wearing 42. We'll talk about that when we return. It's right here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Coming up on April 15th, that is a fairly historical day in Major League Baseball. It's an annual day, Jackie Robinson Day. Everyone around the majors will be wearing number 42 to honor the Dodger legend who broke baseball's color barrier back in 1947. It's a special day for America's pastime, the greatest game of the world, Major League Baseball. Joining us right now to talk about the legacy of Jackie Robinson and his new book. It's called 42 Today. We have Michael Long joining us over the phone right now. Michael, it is a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate you making time for us. Thank you so much.
Hey, Jordan. Thanks to you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. There's legends, and then there's icons. And there is a difference between the two. And I think sometimes in the world of sports, we get it mixed up. You know, an icon is someone that is beyond where a legend can ever approach. And I think when you talk icons, not only in sports, but in American history, there you have the man that wore 42, Jackie Robinson of the Brooklyn Dodgers. And that's why his story is so important. I got a copy of the book 42 today. I'm about halfway through it. And I will tell you, Michael, it's a phenomenal story. Everyone knows Jackie Robinson's story, but this particular book goes beyond the story.
Yeah, that's what we try to do in the book. I'm glad you noticed that, Jordan. And that's an interesting nuance between an icon and a legend. I appreciate that. Robinson was indeed a national icon. And maybe we can talk about the difference there a little bit more. But I can tell you that in the book, we try to move beyond 1947. This is a great year. Robinson is heroic in many ways in 1947. This is the year he turned the other cheek. He soldiers on nonviolently. He's passive in the sense that he doesn't fight back, and he's really safe and non-threatening to white America. But what we do in the book is move beyond that. We don't shatter that myth, but we want to dig deeper and show that Robinson was much more than he appeared to be in 1947.
That's a difficult thing to do. And I guess the reason why I would view that as difficult is because 1947 is just synonymous with Jackie Robinson. Even though he went on to have just a fantastic, legendary Hall of Fame career, it had to have been difficult to move beyond 1947, I would assume.
I think every Jackie Robinson book I read growing up, and most of the books I read even now, focus on Robinson in 1947. That's because that year he shattered the color barrier of Major League Baseball in the 20th century, and he really transformed America. He really did, and he carried Black America on his shoulders, and he inspired so many Black Americans. That's why that year is so important. That's why Robinson's example is so important. Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr., said later that he couldn't do what he did had Jackie Robinson not done what he did in 1947. He said Robinson was a sit-inner before the sit-ins, a freedom rider before the freedom rides. He was the pioneer in the modern Black civil rights movement. And Dr. King was exactly right about that. And that's why 47 is so important.
As far as the book itself goes, I mean, again, it goes in depth into everything that you were just talking about going beyond that year. We're looking at roughly 230 pages. Michael, what part of this book was, I guess, stand out? What stood out to you? Is there a specific chapter? Is there a specific working that you learned and even surprised you about Jackie Robinson?
One of the chapters that surprised me was by Jonathan Eig. Eig is the author of Ali, A Life, Opening Day, Jackie Robinson's First Season. He's just a great guy. And he talks about Robinson in that first year in 1947. Here I am going to 47 again. I'll get beyond this. But Eig tells a really interesting story. Number 4 was available that year. Number 2 was available that year. Those low numbers, which were ideal, aspired to by other players, didn't go to Robinson. He got a really high number, a number that wasn't aspired to by anybody else. It was number 42, and Robinson took that as a challenge. He made a number out of that number. We didn't know 42 before 1947. We sure as heck would know number 42 stands for now. In early 1947, Robinson was a lonely, lonesome fear. He did not have the support of his teammates early in 1947. That myth of Pee Wee Reese going over and standing next to Jackie Robinson early in 1947 and putting his arm around him, that just didn't happen, according to Rachel Robinson and Jonathan Eig's investigative reporting. So that really surprised me. What I love most, though, is the material that puts Robinson into the civil rights movement.
Again, our guest right now, Michael Long, talking about his book, 42 Today, Jackie Robinson and His Legacy. Michael, I want to talk about the chapter that I have found most interesting up to this point, and I'm very familiar with Jackie Robinson's career, personal life. I'm familiar with all of it in depth. Reading Chapter 6, The White Media Missed It. You put this in such great perspective. For what if you're a Dodger fan, you go back to the Montreal Royals and Hector Racine, who was the president of the Montreal Royals, there was a quote where he said they signed Robinson because, quote, he was a good ball player. You go a little bit deeper into that chapter, and I'll even read a little bit of it. To Black America, Robinson changed what it was like to be a Black American. He was a hero who was willing to sacrifice his life for the cause of racial equality and equal justice. Then you skip down one paragraph. To white America, Robinson was a Black baseball player. I found those few words to be just so deep, and I never really looked at it in that regard. Chapter 6 to me has just been absolutely phenomenal.
I love that chapter. That's by my colleague Chris Lamb, who's written quite a bit about that topic. You know, in 1945, when Robinson is first signed, sports writers in New York get together for their annual reception party, and they put on a skit, and the skit depicts Robinson as a butler to a Southern aristocrat. The white sports writers of this era, we have to remember, were part of the racism that Robinson had to overcome in 1947. They had contributed to it, and most of them, many of them, had not called for black Americans to enter into Major League Baseball. Many of them were opposed to it. So when they wrote about Robinson in 1947, they didn't provide type of context about the racist history that led to 1947 because they were part of it. They built it up. They were part of that culture. Black newspapers had been clamoring for a black American to enter into Major League Baseball for years, and so had, believe it or not, white communist papers and black communist papers as well. And so black newspapers and communist newspapers did a much better job of reporting 1947. They added history to it. They added context to it. And they explained what it meant in terms of future possibilities for black Americans.
As you continue to put this book together, and again, we'll talk about the landscape of the book because it is somewhat unique, but to really do a piece of work on someone that was celebrated yet despised in the same notion, and all these years later, we have a day in Major League Baseball that celebrates what he managed to accomplish. You know, today there's talk that sports, it does anything but unite. Well, that's what sports, that's part of the reason why I love sports, that it unites us, right? And that's what Jackie Robinson, all these years later, that's what he did. There's a lot of pressure, I would assume, that comes with putting together a piece like this.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that putting the book together was pretty easy in the sense that everybody I reached out to responded with a positive yes. Robinson still has that type of magnetic power and that magnetic pull. But there's pressure in making sure you get the story right and trying to treat the legacy with fairness so that you try to come to it from a lot of different angles. And we look at Robinson's foundations, we look at his baseball career, we look at his civil rights career, and we look at his impact on the wider world of sports as well. To look at Robinson's legacy requires a heck of a wide angle. So, yeah, there's pressure to get that story right, no doubt about it.
And as you alluded to, when you look at the volume of what he accomplished, right, it goes beyond 1947, and we can actually speak on it today. And I know that the book actually puts that in perspective, right? When you look at what he did from a civil rights activism standpoint, that has led us in some regard to where we're at right now.
Yeah, there, let me just take two quick examples. Colin Kaepernick's knee, let's start there. In July 4th, 1969, the New York Times wrote an article on the flag, and they had interviewed Robinson for that. And Robinson, this is again July 4th, 1969, says that he wouldn't fly the flag on that day or any other day. And when he sees the flag, he just figures the guy who's driving the car having this flag decal, he says, isn't his friend. And at this point, the flag has become captive to the white backlash movement led by Nixon. So when we look at Colin Kaepernick's knee, you have to keep in mind that he's standing in the legacy of Jackie Robinson. And Robinson, in his 1972 autobiography, actually says, I couldn't stand for the national anthem today because I know I'm a black man in a white world. The issues that Robinson faced continue today. Let's just look at the second example, police brutality. Robinson was a victim of police brutality several times in his life. A couple of times, he had a police gun in his wrist through no fault of his own. And in 1970, believe it or not, he stood next to the Black Panthers and supported them when they faced black police brutality. So even that example still has relevance today. And Robinson spoke a lot against police brutality throughout his life.
Again, Michael Long joining us right now as we talk about 42 today. Michael, it has been a pleasure to chat with you over the last 10 or so minutes. Before I let you go, we have to talk about the book. I know it came out in February. Let everyone know where they can find it. And of course, where can they find more about you?
You can find 42 today at all indie sellers online. You can find them at all major booksellers online, all indie books and major booksellers everywhere. You can find me at on Facebook at Michael Long. You can find me on Twitter at Michael G. Long, too.
And then on top of that, as I said, the landscape of the book itself, I mean, it's forwarded by plenty of other people. I mean, it was a great collaborative effort to put this out.
Yeah, and it was a labor of love. It really was. I appealed to Ken Burns, for example, and to George Vesey of the New York Times, and to Jonathan Eich, and some really big people, Kevin Morita at ESPN. And again, they all said, yes, what a pleasure it's been to put this book together.
Well, Michael, it's definitely been a pleasure to read it up to this point. Again, I'm about midway through. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, just like I have our conversation. Thank you so much for taking out the time to join us today, especially just a couple of days ahead of Jackie Robinson Day. I definitely appreciate it. It was a fun conversation.
Thanks so much, Jordan. It's been great.
We're going to break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hi, this is Jason Kidd. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Bescarini, KOAL, 750 AM.
Back to put final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Monday, and boy, I tell you, it feels different not having any local basketball. We've had local basketball since the middle of or late November. Finally came to an end over the weekend. It was a fun season for both teams. Everything that these student-athletes have had to endure. But we do have plenty more coming up now that spring sports, it feels like it's go time now in that season. Do not forget, you can get your complete recaps of everything that went down over the weekend. Everything, as far as JUCO, basketball, to baseball. We had some softball track and field. Head on over to CastleCountryRadio.com, and you can take a look at everything that's happening right there. You can also podcast Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a guest host in the studio, Steve Bordstein. You know Steve. He's joined us for many, many years on the show over the phone. Steve's going to join me in studio tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. The phone interviews are a lot of fun, but when you can go face-to-face, it's a little bit different. So we'll talk with Steve Bordstein tomorrow right here on Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Michael Long. I want to thank Coach Jim Jukes for also taking out the time to join us. We'll be back. See you again tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.